Welcome to another episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? The podcast that says it's okay to believe in free speech and democracy, and it's also okay to disagree with leftist populist ideologies. Today, I'll be talking about the dark side of Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter has not been good for racial unity in the United States or anywhere in the world. Most of all, it has been bad for Black people and bad for society. It's created anger, resentment, and division. And in my opinion, it has regressed race relations, which were on a positive trajectory. And you have to ask yourself whether making everyone angry, resentful, and divided is a worthwhile political endeavor. At the same time, the movement has shown scant interest in improving Black lives by ignoring solving problems, but instead promoting racial conflict via negative propaganda. So if the movement was trying to achieve racial harmony and a better outcome for Black people, I believe it has achieved the opposite. So let's start with good leadership. What are we trying to achieve? So the most powerful form of leadership creates positive direction, hope, whereas Black Lives Matter has created a culture of victimhood, which destroys hope. The most effective leadership creates equality of opportunity and promotes the belief that hard work and endeavor will be rewarded instead of destroying faith in the system, which achieves the opposite. Good leadership wants to create fair systems that don't disadvantage anyone or discriminate and create a positive culture. I'd like to emphasize that this series is all about bringing people together. So my focus is on ideological approaches that create equality and racial harmony. There is racial discrimination in the world, and we should all fight against it because it is evil. However, while you may believe that Black Lives Matter is the correct vehicle for positive change, I should also be allowed to criticize its ideologies if I think they are bad for Black people and society without being accused of racism. Why? Because Black people can criticize white governments and ideologies and vice versa. That's the whole point of democracy. I don't believe that racial division and the erosion of Western democracy are the answer to racial harmony. You can't build anything by tearing things down. A dark nihilistic approach leads to anarchy, and ironically, chaotic environments tend to encourage the strong to feast on the weak, the opposite of an equal and fair society. Defeating nationalism destroys the hope and aspiration of society. It's bad for everyone. Black Lives Matter is not exactly fighting to take down Hitler or Stalin here. It's fighting to take down the freest and most equal society humanity has ever produced. My greatest issue with Black Lives Matter is the promotion of a culture of victimhood. It is proven that humans require aspiration for existential fulfillment. Victimhood destroys this faith in the individual, the system, and produces a culture that cannot succeed. Aspiration drives positivity and productivity, so we need to encourage a culture that inspires people to work harder, to follow the example of those who are successful. Individuals must have the faith that their endeavor will be rewarded, that they are working in a system of equality that supports them and a culture that supports their aspirations. The greatest expression of leadership is to inspire individuals to bring out the best in themselves and the system. Therefore, victimhood defeats good leadership at its core because it destroys individual aspiration. You cannot hope to succeed because the system is against you, and it promotes disrespect for societal law, the system, destroying faith in Western democracy, the one system that has worked towards equality and freedom. And this is bad for everyone. There may be a need for some home improvements, but burning down the house we all live in is bad for all of its inhabitants. Black Lives Matter has increased resentment by promoting the politics of envy. But most of all, victimhood makes people unhappy, angry, and convinces them that they can't fix any of the problems that are the cause of their distress. It makes them feel helpless. They are victims, drained of the very hope and aspiration that they need to uplift themselves and their communities. The problem is that blame, recrimination, and regret, living in the past are all obstacles to progress. You can't fix any of the problems that are causing these issues. You can't build a future with recriminations, and this kind of mentality traps people in the past. The other problem is about the politics of sympathy. So sympathy requires a manipulation of people to feel sorry for someone, to give them something for free, to give them something more. And that affects the person who is being given the sympathy because they believe that they depend on gifts from other people to survive. And what you really want is a culture of aspiration and endeavor. But victimhood is an excellent propaganda tool to control a group of people, and it's an antidote to success. The more individually helpless victims feel, the less they are able to take responsibility and empower themselves. They can't trust the system because it's inherently racist. So where can they turn? To the only group that shares their sense of marginalization and gives them a sense of connection. The problem is that they're connecting to an angry victim mob. That creates a cycle of destruction because the more marginalized they feel, the more they turn to each other and empower the very thinking that has led them to this dark and hopeless place in the first place. So those who wield the propaganda are empowered and they have enslaved a generation of victims. Propaganda is all about creating heightened emotion so that people will not be swayed by reason. So the purpose of BLM propaganda is to make people angry because this empowers the movement. Once people start listening to reason, engaging, having meaningful dialogue with others, then the propaganda movement is lost and disempowered. So BLM can't afford to allow this. But promotion of racial disharmony is not in the interests of American society, white or black. Besides creating an angry generation of black people, this approach alienates white and black moderates. Black moderates who want to engage in meaningful dialogue are discouraged from doing so, or worse, swayed by their belief that the system and white people are racist and against them. Many moderate white people who have historically committed themselves to creating an equal non-racist society are either angered by being wrongfully accused of racism or silenced by the aggression of the radical left. And they don't have a negotiating partner since they're told that whites have no right to participate in this discussion. So society becomes more divided along racial lines, and those that want to engage are disabled by suspicion, anger, and direct political interference. Not exactly a system that encourages racial harmony. And ignoring historical revisionism, recent history does show significant white commitment in the US to achieving equality, even if this is a work in progress. Many important statistics show tremendous improvement over the last few decades. With the encouragement of the science of sympathy and victimhood, we see the emergence of self-loathing white left-wing Americans supporting the destruction of the greatest political system, Western democracy. And we also see stimulation of a new xenophobia, racism against whites. The definition of racism is prejudice, discrimination, or antagonism by the individual community or institutions against a personal people based on their membership of a particular race or ethnic group. You'll note that there is no clause that says that you can be racist against certain groups, but not against others. So anyone says that racism against whites is not racism is racist because they are differentiating between the treatment of different groups based on race. We see the promotion of the lie that white people are the cause of all the world's problems. Humans love being xenophobic and victimizing others, so this feeds into the human bloodlust and tribalism. Accept that people can be racist against whites and be rewarded with affirmation. Anyone who argues that whites aren't bad is a terrible racist. To support this requires historical revisionism, because history supports the notion that all races, not just white people, have been cruel oppressors at one time or another, and most races have been victims at one time or another as well. It's not a white issue at all. It is a human failing. Humans are imperialistic and prone to abuse of power. Ironically, modern Western democracy has actually aspired to change this, to become better by promoting an equal, fair, and tolerant society. And I don't see many people fleeing America to submit themselves to the rule of African countries. The narrative that white people are racists ignores the fact that the Western democratic system has way more freedom, fairness, and quality of life than the alternatives. So are whites really the bad guys of history? The truth is that people of color are far safer and enjoy greater freedom and human rights under white rule than they do under black rule in Africa. Even in the US, more black people are killed by other black people than by whites. So I'm just not buying this narrative that white people must feel more guilty than everyone else for the human predilection for dominance. So what about the history of extreme black-on-black violence in Africa? Have a look at the recent history of the Rwandan genocide, of Sudan, of Somalia. The immense cruelty and the millions of lives lost in the Chinese-Japanese conflicts. The wanton destruction of human life during the last 1,000 years of brutal internecine Arab conflict. Probably you don't want to hear about the Turkish genocide of 1 million Armenians, or that black Africans and Arabs were major players in the slave trade, and slavery still exists in part of non-white Africa. So basically, I'm making the point not that white people or black people are worse than each other, but rather that we are all responsible for oppression, for historical conflict, and of cruelty, and it's not a white issue, it is a human issue. It also becomes very difficult to apply this equation consistently, because what is the statute of limitations on military conquest and colonialism? Most of the world's borders, including those of non-Caucasian continents, have been defined by military conquest. So if we truly want to go back to the original inhabitants of every land, then we will have to give South Africa back to the Hottentots and the Bushmen. It's all going to be very complicated. Black Americans must return to Africa and leave America to the Native Americans. So am I an Eastern European Jew who emerged from over 1,000 years of almost unrelenting Eastern European anti-Semitism, murder and oppression, responsible for what British colonialists did with African slaves in the 1800s? We do not apply this white guilt consistently because most would consider it unreasonable to target Germans for what happened in the Second World War, or to demand compensation from the Turkish government for the genocide of 1 million Armenian Christians. Yet many want to lump all white people into the category of oppressors, regardless of their history. Isn't this racist? So we are judging people not on the basis of their actions or even their history, but on the color of their skin. And what is the statute of limitations on white guilt? 200 years? 300 years? At what point do people become responsible for their own actions? According to the Lancet Journal, between 1995 and 2015, approximately 5 million children, including 3 million infants, died as a consequence of armed conflicts that did not involve white people at all. At what point do we stop blaming white colonialists and saying that black lives rarely do matter, including when they are lost in black-on-black conflicts? Let's move on to other BLM divisive narratives. To prevent any chance of positive engagement within the system, BLM creates a number of divisive adversarial narratives. The first is the presumption of systemic racism. Anytime a black person suffers an adverse outcome, we must presume that this is due to systemic racism. Anyone who wants to argue is now an enemy because they are supporting a racist system, according to this philosophy. So we can also discount any inconvenient facts, and we need not entertain inconvenient opinions. Also noting that you will always have racism in society because people are by nature tribal and xenophobic. So there will always be whites who don't like blacks and vice versa. This can be an individual problem, and it's not always the fault of the system. So even if a white cop kills a black person for racist reasons, this may be due to individual, not systemic racism. Please watch my video on justice if you want to understand this point better. However, BLM still has a sticky, logical problem with this bad white colonialist narrative, because many white American immigrants have a history of suffering and were not beneficiaries, but victims of colonialism. In fact, under European colonialism, the average white person suffered terribly and had no human rights. They certainly would not have supported the system, but they had no power to fight it. Can we really hold all white Americans responsible for what British colonialists did 200 years ago? Especially that many were themselves victims of murder and persecution under the British and other Europeans. How can we promote an equal society if we prevent poor white people from succeeding in America because they are white? The issue of redressing balance while maintaining fairness is very complex if we can be bothered to deal with it properly. And we can't destroy national morale by disadvantaging white people to the point that they become resentful and lose hope, because that's not in the national interest. At what point do we have to live in the present and move on? At what point does it become unfair to disadvantage poor white people who can't get into university based on their race? And there are other big problems with long-term affirmative action. Ditching meritocracy is unfair and bad for productivity because you are determining an outcome based on race or so-called representation instead of performance. But society and businesses depend on productivity. And again, this highly impractical system of proportional representation isn't applied consistently by these movements because the majority of wealth in Asian countries is in the hands of Asians. The majority of wealth in Middle Eastern countries is in the hands of Arabs. Nobody objects to Bollywood casting Indians in their movies or Korean movies casting Koreans. No black or white representation there. But in the West, we must feel bad about Friends showcasing white friends in a majority white country. So it seems to be about white guilt, not about principle, or it would go both ways. The worst of BLM propaganda gets around this by declaring white people to be intrinsically racist. Now we need not grapple with the difficult political issues around how long we persist with affirmative action systems and how we redress imbalances in society and create a happy, equal, and fair society. Now we've heard lots of rhetoric from BLM about the fact that white people have no right to an opinion on black issues and they shouldn't be part of the conversation because they're not black. The problem is that racial harmony and redressing societal imbalances is not a black or a white issue. It's a societal issue for everyone. We all vote in elections, we pay taxes, and we all have skin in the game, so to speak. The point of democracy is to bring people together, to disagree, to negotiate, to compromise. That way we find common ground and we start to work together towards a better solution for everyone. We start to understand where other people are coming from. We see the humanity in each other. We understand other people's concerns, their grievances, their aspirations. And instead of seeing each other's skin color, we actually start to work together as a community. We become invested in this process because we see everyone else as human beings. We understand their emotions are just like our own, and we work together for the greater good. Unfortunately, many BLM protagonists have promoted the opposite, tribalism, a system of us and them. Humans love tribalism. It encourages an approach that if people disagree with you, they are your enemy. It requires much less energy to be angry than to engage. Engagement requires that you actually listen to the needs of others and invest time and effort in solutions. Tribalism feeds a herd mentality. We're designed to be a communal species, and we get affirmation from others who share our emotions and approach. We get a sense of togetherness. But now anyone who speaks out or delivers an alternative message is a threat to the group. So the next step is to seek greater influence by controlling and dominating the opposition or silencing them. We feed and praise each other's anger and resentment, and this creates a great sense of affirmation and togetherness. And in this context, persecution of other people is called brave and moral. Protest movements can highlight issues, but they don't solve them. Good leaders listen. They make sure people feel heard, but then they redirect the crowd towards meaningful engagement and solutions. Bad leadership encourages more protest, anger, and tribalism. It creates a delirious mob frenzy, but that exacerbates disunity and danger. Of course, we must acknowledge the injustices of the past and address imbalances, but this cannot be achieved through victimhood and tribalism. Solving problems requires a focus on, well, solving problems, and that requires a correct diagnosis of underlying issues and treatment of the causes. How do we inspire individuals to buy into the system? How do we fix systemic issues to enable us? And what kind of culture do we want to promote that will encourage people to succeed and get along? Definitely, we don't achieve this by promoting hopelessness and disrespect for the system. So if there are problems, let's fix them together, not divide by race and destroy the very system that promotes a civilized society. We can only move forward if we look at solving actual issues like building up black communities and stimulating community pride. We want to reduce proliferation of gangs, single parenthood, teenage pregnancy, and seek long-term solutions to poverty. So we need to talk about investment, creating positive culture around education, and successful role modeling. This requires a focus on the culture of upliftment, the opposite of promoting victimhood. People must receive encouragement to take pride in themselves, their history, their culture, and believe that the way forward is to take responsibility for their own lives, and importantly, that they will be rewarded for this attitude. You want young people to aspire to be more like an Oprah or a Morgan Freeman, not a George Floyd. And the last thing you want is to destroy all hope. All evidence points to the fact that positive solution and outcome-oriented approaches are more successful. But that's exhausting because you have to acknowledge your problems, take responsibility, work hard, uplift yourself and your community. It's always easy to be angry and problem-oriented instead. So, for example, given that black-on-black violence is the leading cause of death in young black men in the US, then if black lives truly matter to you more than anti-white propaganda, then promoting anger towards law enforcement, hero-worshipping criminals who resist arrest, and promoting defunding the police is exactly the opposite of what you should be encouraging. It's a counterproductive knee-jerk reaction, and we should rather be having a reasonable discussion about how to redesign a law enforcement system in black areas that is palatable and sustainable to the local population, rather than throwing the baby out with the bathwater for the sake of negative propaganda. We should actually be increasing funding to good law enforcement instead of promoting anarchy, a terrible culture if black lives matter, because many black people will suffer and die from this culture. After all, it is the law-abiding black people that suffer the most from crime, and they are the very people we want to support because economic and social upliftment is the path to success in underprivileged communities. So since I do care about racial equality, I oppose defunding of the police. It's exactly the opposite of racism. I'm using this as an example to show you that disagreeing with ideological approaches of Black Lives Matter does not make you a racist. It may be the opposite, that you actually care. It is intrinsic to the democratic process that people can express contrary views without feeling threatened. So if black lives truly matter to you, then maybe you will be more concerned about black-on-black violence in America than you are about spreading self-destructive propaganda. Maybe you'll concern yourself more with the fate of 500 million African people who live below the poverty line, rather than being quite so concerned with the relative luxury of Western inhabitants of all colors. If black lives truly matter to you, then promoting nihilism and racial division is not the way to go. And we should all speak out against these attitudes because they are bad for our shared society, our shared society. So what are the solutions? Individually, we want to help citizens work hard, aspire to succeed, and respect the system. We want to create a system that is worthy of respect, root out any systemic racism, and ensure equal opportunity for all and reward for hard work. And we want to create a culture that is positive, law-abiding, forward-thinking, and future-focused. So here's my message to BLM. Hope and unity matter. If you enjoyed this podcast, please feel free to follow me and share it with your friends. And join me for the next episode of How Did So-Called Progressive Politics Become So Regressive? Please note that the views and opinions on this show are my own and do not reflect those of my colleagues or employers.